Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
Welcome to Hacks and Hobbies. I'm your host, Junaid Ahmed, and today's guest is someone who lives and breathes creativity in every form, from executive leadership to poetry. Kate Vollman is the CEO of Floyd Coaching, the host of Create for No Reason and Lead with Culture, and the author of Do What You Love, a guide to living your creative life without leaving your job. Now, if you've ever struggled to find time for your creative pursuits or wondered how to reconnect with your purpose without quitting your day job, this episode is for you. Kate, welcome to the podcast.
Junaid, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you because your book talks about what I talk about on the podcast, Hacks and Hobbies. Like, literally, I started a podcast talking about my hobbies, doing the beekeeping, cycling, and whatnot. And we all need those creative outlets because we as human beings, we don't just have the left hemisphere, which is all analytical, and we also have the right hemisphere, which focuses on creativity and all the different things that we enjoy with music and painting and walking. So I absolutely love the book you've written. I can't wait to go check it out. But before we start, I want to go into the early calling. Did you always know that you wanted to be a writer and coach? Or did creativity show up later in your leadership journey?
I did not know that I wanted to be either one of those things. I never thought I would be doing what I'm doing, actually, which I always love asking people if, you know, does your life look the way that you thought it was going to? Most people say no. And I think the cool thing is that the opportunities that I received early on in my career, I often attribute so much of the success that I've had with the job that I had at a chamber of commerce, because it was there that I learned so much about entrepreneurship and philanthropy and advocacy and community. And I was in my 20s and my dad, he worked for the same company for 41 years, which is unheard of these days. And so I didn't know about entrepreneurship. And then I was surrounded by all of these incredible CEOs and entrepreneurs and people that were doing these incredible things in the community. And it really opened my eyes. And I think that part of working there and meeting so many incredible leaders and mentors really pushed me into pursuing some of the passions that I had.
You know, that's really powerful. It's these early experiences when you're exposed to so many different opportunities, not just opportunities, but you get to see from the other side, oh my God, people are talking about this, people are doing this kind of work. And it just opens your mind because you're no longer in that fishbowl, right? When we leave our homes, when you graduate, you're essentially in a fishbowl and you're just hanging out with those fishes. And when you leave that bowl, you see, oh my God, there's so much diversity in the world, not just in business, but also in what people get to do, right?
Yeah. And it's so funny because there are communities for everything. Way back when, when we didn't have the internet and social media and it wasn't as easy to find. But today, I mean, I've been going down a rabbit hole of people or of creators, of musicians. They talk a lot about music. How do you write music? How do you create music? Do you use AI or not? Because some artists have different opinions on that. And I am just so fascinated by it. I'm not a musician. I don't play an instrument. One day I will, I hope, but but there's these communities of all these people, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, this is such a this is their world. They live in it." and I'm just discovering it. I'm like, look how cool this is. Yeah. And that's what, and same thing for me. I have to remind my team often around, because I'm in the personal development space. So I run a coaching company, work with incredible coaches, and our whole mission is to help people grow and become the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
And I have to remind my team, I'm like, look, some of this stuff you live, eat, and breathe, going after your dreams and making things happen and holding yourself accountable. But the people that we're working with, this is new to them. So many of them have not gotten to that level. They haven't read all the books that we've read or experienced all those things that we have in order to get to where they want to go in life. And this is where we get to help them achieve those things.
It's almost like telling a butterfly what it's like to be a fish, right? Or telling a cat what it's like to be a dog or another animal. Like, it's the experiences are different, the language is different, there's so much depth in each and every single one of those experiences, which is mind-blowing, right? Now, Kate, you talk a lot about choosing creativity without needing to abandon stability. How did that message become central to your book?
So I had a dream of writing a book for over a decade, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners either have written books or they want to write a book. We all have something inside of us, a message that we want to share. And I kind of just kept going around different topics and things I wanted to write about. But finally, when I decided, okay, I'm really going to write this book, what is it going to be about? What message do I really want to share with the world? I thought about my background and my career.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked for people. I've had my own businesses. I've gone back to work for people. And no matter what I was doing in my career, I always tapped into my creativity. I always did something on the side. When YouTube came about and Facebook just started, I dug into doing videos. I mean, obviously everyone does videos now, but I remember having my little, in 2008, I had my little pink flip cam, and I was exploring what that looked like. And so I had a dream of hosting a morning show. And so I started a morning show in my local community, and I got a host, and we made it happen, and we started working with the Chamber of Commerce. It nice. Became a whole thing.
Yeah.
And that wasn't my job. I didn't get paid to do it, but I was leading with my curiosity. And so I always encourage people, look, you do this on your show, right? You're teaching people, I have this passion. How can I turn it into a business? And that's awesome and a beautiful thing. And we live in a world where we can do that. But not everybody wants to.
Yes.
The moment that we get paid for a passion, our relationship with it changes a little bit.
Yeah.
And so for some people, they want to learn how to play the piano or garden or cook or start a podcast. And it can just be for the fun of it. Like, why did we stop doing things just for the joy of it? Just because we loved it. We don't have to monetize every single passion that we have.
I totally agree. We do not need to monetize everything that we do. There was a few months ago, a friend of mine reached out to me, and he's a friend in the cycling community, and he's been working with his son building this boat. And then he documented this entire journey, and he came to me. He's like, Junaid, I want to launch this YouTube channel where I teach people how to do these boats, but then I want to monetize. Like, okay, how many videos have you made that are edited and that are posted on YouTube? It's like, none. Like, well, it's a journey, right? It's going to take time. And depending on how good that editing is, you might get to 1,000 subscribers within a month. You might get to 1,000 subscribers within, 30 days or even less. It all comes down to how much passion do they get to see in that video, and how well is that edited? And that's going to cost you time and money, right? And he's like, no, I don't want to do this. It's too much work. Like, if you're not willing to put in the work, if you're not willing to put in the time, that you cannot expect to see that return either, right? Keep it as a passion, because the most important thing you're getting to do with that time is spending time with your son and teaching him all these things. Like, why do we have the calligraphy fonts in our computers? Because Steve Jobs loved design because he was hanging out with his dad in the garage finishing these cars or cleaning, you know, making these, working on these epic cars. It was a hobby. There's no monetization. The monetization is your time with the kids or with the people that you're working with.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in my book, I talk about ROI and ROC. So ROI, it's business term. It's return on investment. And if I'm going to spend X amount of dollars or if I'm going to spend X amount of time on something, I want to get a return on it. But ROC is return on creating. We don't consider the return on creating. When you are creating just for the joy of it, you get infused with energy and passion and excitement and engagement. And there's something to be said about that. You can use all of that in the other areas of your life. And so I think what's so interesting is that we have this beautiful opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to do something for the joy of it. And hey, maybe someone starts a podcast and it turns into their business. And that's amazing. But it probably wouldn't have turned into it if their whole purpose for it was just to monetize it. Because now the end result they're looking for is just structuring it that way versus I'm going to be focused on what is the content about? What is the show about? What is the purpose that it serves? And then you show up in a way that people know that you're doing it because you love it. Like when we think about, like, think about the creators that you love and you follow consistently. They are passionate about their stories. They are passionate about the message that they want to share. I mean, this is why it resonates with people. And so when people talk about, oh, I just want to have this YouTube channel and put it up and I don't want to do that much and passive income. And we throw I know you had passive income man himself on Pat Flynn, one of your episodes, Pat Flynn. It's like, that's awesome. But passive income, people don't really understand what that actually means.
No, they don't.
Like, oh, I'm just going to turn a lever and all of a sudden I'm going to be hanging out on the beach and money's just going to pour into my account. Okay, well, that's not accurate.
Yes, passing income is not a genie in a bottle that you open and you suddenly have three wishes. Okay, you lead a company. You mentioned you coach teams, you write books. What does your actual creative practice look like and how do you protect space for it?
That depends on what it is that I am working on. Mm. When I was writing the book, and I'm actually working on another book now, and it is a beast of a project. You know, anyone that's written a book, they know you really do have to be sensitive to the time that you spend writing. You have to carve out that time. And so when I'm writing a book, then I usually focus, I set a goal for myself of how many days, like I'll do for how many days a week that I have to be writing. And then I will give myself a word count. So some people say I'm going to write for 30 minutes, three times a week. I like a word count. So it's like maybe 500 words, four times a week or whatever it is. And then I give myself space to create that. I also love finding communities of writers. Like I joined this writing challenge and they get on and everybody's just writing. So you're on Zoom, there's maybe 60 people. We're not talking, nothing's going on, but we're all just writing. And there's just something about that inspires you to write, you know, because writing can be it's a solo activity. You have to sit down and you have to think through a lot of stuff. So I really do. I do like doing that. I feel like you just have to. And I talk about this in the book, too, because I share the seven myths that stop people from exploring their creative pursuits. And myth number seven is inspiration will strike. I have to remind myself of that all the time. I don't always feel like sitting down and writing, but I have to. Like, I have to sit down. If I said I'm going to write at this time and it's on my calendar, I just set a timer on my phone, 30 minutes, 20 minutes, however much time I'm going to give myself.
Yeah.
And I just sit down and I write. And what happens is, because I sat down and I started, most of the time I get so excited. I'm like, oh, okay, now I'm on a roll and I'm going to keep going. But if I just waited for inspiration, like some people, like if I waited to feel like writing, if I waited to feel like doing a video, I would never create anything.
No.
Like it's just, it's easier to do nothing than it is to get up and do something. So, so yeah, that's kind of how I do writing. I kind of do the same thing when, if I'm working on videos or podcasts, I really just schedule the time to record and then to edit. I make the time to edit it as well. So.
No, you're absolutely right. Because when we find the discipline, right? Inspiration is kind of like the motivation. It's short-lived. It might come. It might not. Actually, there are more chances for a lightning to strike for than an inspiration for you to do the work.
I know.
Work.
It's like I love. So I talk a little bit about muses in my book because I love the topic of muses and how some people, you know, they have a muse. And Stephen King wrote the book on writing. I love reading books about the craft of writing. I love reading books about the craft of anything that you're interested in, right? Yeah. Like, it's just like, it's so fascinating to hear other people's, their writing process, their creative process. And Stephen King, I love, he has my favorite vision of what a muse is. And, you know, most people think a muse is what, this beautiful angel that comes down from heaven and sprinkles fairy dust. And then all of a sudden we feel inspired. But he talks about the muse as, he says, the muse, it's a basement kind of guy. And you have to get down into the basement. And he's down there and he's smoking his cigar and he's looking at his bowling trophies and he's not even helping you.
Yeah.
But once you start working, that's when he'll work to help you. So it's like you have to get into the trenches and start doing the work, and then the muse will show up.
I love that. It's almost like you're putting, like, for example, right, marathon runners or whoever's going for running, you got to get into that action of, okay, I'm putting my shoes on, I'm doing the little things that are going to get me prepared to then start writing, to then doing the creative thing. And I love that you shared that you sit in this Zoom room with 60 other people. You know, you're being accountable to not just yourself, but also to the 60, 59 other people in the room, because they're going to come ask you, like, hey, how'd you do? So it's a lot easier to do it with community than to do it alone, because you have this creative energy flowing and it's connecting all those 60 people with you through quantum entanglement or what have you, because you're all focused on bringing that energy out of you.
Yes. And it doesn't have to be 60 people, right? Like, it can be two people. It can be three people. It literally, it's like, grab a friend that has a project, whether they want to write a book or start creating more social posts or writing articles or doing a podcast or videos. You could do the same thing for editing videos. You know, a lot of people don't want to do that too. Just put it on mute, put the Zoom on mute. I have a friend who has been on my show a couple times. He's a poet and he writes beautiful poetry. His name's Terrence and I just adore him. And we talk all the time on Instagram, and every Friday I message him. I'm like, how's your novel coming? Like, and he's like, that helps me get the work done. Like, I know you're going to ask me every Friday how I've come along this week. And so it like forces me to do the writing. So accountability is a huge piece. I mean, look, as a coaching company, I can't tell you, that is always one of the number, that's like probably like in the top two of why people would do coaching, right? Like, you know, you can do it. You have everything that you need, but we don't hold ourselves accountable. And so when you have a coach, I can't tell you how many clients have come into a session and they said, I did what I was supposed to do, but I just did it last night because I knew we were having a call this morning and I didn't want you to yell at me. And so we need that accountability.
We do. Absolutely do. Well, Kate, let's do a lightning round of questions. A hobby that you wish you got into. What was it? Tell me more.
I already kind of mentioned it. I am going to play the piano one day. I love music, and my friends all tell me I have great long fingers to play the piano.
You can reach the...
I've taken lessons. Like, I took lessons many years ago, but then I got into sports instead. So yeah. I abandoned my piano lessons. And but I'll go back one day. I will.
Awesome. Next up, what is your favorite creative book?
Oh, I have so many favorites. I would say I constantly recommend The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. That is definitely on the top of my list. I also love Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. Those are probably two of my faves. Oh, and Rick Rubin's book that just came out a couple of years ago, nice. The Creative Act.
I love it. Next up. What gets you out of a creative rut?
Oh, this is easy. My creative friends. We all need creative friends in our life, and those are the people that are they are pursuing their creativity. They are getting out into the world, pursuing their dreams. Call someone up, and you need those people that they're not just going to say, "Oh, don't worry about it, don't do it." No, you need the people that are like, "No, you got it.
You gotta do it.
Get moving." Yeah.
Exactly. You're 100% right. And last one, what's your favorite moment from Create for No Reason podcast?
Ooh, my favorite moment. There are so many great moments, and I'm so grateful for everyone that comes on the show as a guest. I just have had some really remarkable people join me. I will say probably one of my absolute favorite creators, authors, thinkers, Derek Sivers. I had him on my show, and it was just one of the most delightful conversations I have ever had. And he just continues to inspire me through his work. And he's amazing. So that was pretty awesome.
I love it, Kate. Thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun getting to chat with you. I know we've met over Clubhouse for the past few months, and finally getting to meet you is such a pleasure. And what's funny is that I was a guest on Dave Campbell's show just earlier this week, and he really enjoyed the conversation as well. We've explored so much here, the foundation, but what's cool is that there's so much more to this story. In the next episode, we'll dive into how you build company culture through creativity, how to lead teams. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Janae. This was so fun.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we've explored the foundation, but there's so much more to this story. In part two, we'll dive into how Kate builds company culture through creativity, how to lead teams without losing your soul, and why doing what you love isn't optional, it's essential. So hit that subscribe button. Part two drops next.
Thank you for listening to this Hacks and Hobbies episode. Junaid would love to hear from you, so please leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. Visit hacksandhobbies.com to find additional information on the guest today, as well as the show notes.